Hello, and welcome to Link Network Readiness Assessment. I'm here with Brian Ricks.
And I'm here with Tom Foreman.
And we are going to go over the discovery phase of the Microsoft Network methodology for Link Network Readiness.
Yep.
So, the discovery phase, we're going to go over these topics. There's six of them in this module, all the different things you're going to need to discover and document, including the network, clients, impairments, and then we'll also do not really a demo on the TRIP tool, but we'll kind of go over it a little bit, and then we'll a couple more topics there that we'll go over. We're going to set some expectations about this module and these exam. The target audience, as you can see here.
And it's exactly what the target audience is from the courseware as well as from the exams themselves. So we're looking for those that want to be participating in this should be those that have Link experience and knowledge, because we're not teaching Link, we're teaching the methodology for the network assessment of Link.
And then here's the two of the prerequisites that we highly recommend, the supporting material. The Link Server Networking Guide, there's a version 2 that came out last in November of 2013. A lot of this course revolves around that, a lot of the exam. And here's a link to the exam that corresponds with this course and that these are recordings this module is designed for. So we'll jump right into the first topic. It's documenting your current network infrastructure. This will require, first you got to discover it, everything about the current environment that might affect a Link Network Readiness Assessment. You'll need to gather their historical metrics, how the users use their current systems, and then you'll need to document it. So during the discovery of their current IT infrastructure, the network assessment, you'll need to discover everything. And there could be a bunch of more nodes off of this little graphic here. What their topology is, their utilization levels, very important. Do they have QoS policies? Is it properly configured? Do they have hardware load balancers? What's their firewall architecture?
Yeah, really the key here is that it's a solid understanding of everything that has anything to do with IP that's on the physical network. So whether it be that they have or do not have load balancers is not as relevant as making sure that we know they have or do not have these load balancers. Not only from a design perspective, because we'll have to recommend if they don't have them and they want high availability that they do need them, but from the general sense of do they have the capabilities of potentially what our design will entail. So knowing what they have and how they use them today, how they implement them, are they do them at a layer 3 level or is it a layer 2 level? What kind of configurations in generality do they have? That's what we're looking for. We just want to know if what is available. And sometimes they don't have the information, right? Sometimes when you ask this, nobody knows. And so now we're making these guesses, ideally educated, but we're making guesses on what is in the environment, how things are really configured and how things are thought to be configured. And sometimes that's a variance. That's not the same all the time. And so knowing that and just keeping an open mind and being more of a sponge during the discovery phase is key, really important to what we're doing.
And before you go into a network assessment, the discovery, you'll probably ahead of time contact the different groups and say, can you gather this information for me? Talk to the security team, talk with the networking team, talk to the telephony team. But then once you have that information, you'll need to trust but verify. That's very important.
It's not uncommon when we've gone into large deployments, we're talking to 50 to 100,000 user seats, that there is no data gathering that they'll do for you. Instead, it is you scheduling meetings, typically large meetings where we level set things, and then one-on-one meetings with the various groups. Because sometimes if you get into large organizations, very common, you'll have the AD team, you'll have the network team, you'll have the external intranet team, you'll have the security team, you will have the client team, the desktop team, all of the various groups that all own their own information. And while everybody knows a little bit about everybody, the authoritative person is whoever owns and manages that group. So you're going to have to meet with them and say, this is what you said, this is what I see, where are we at? What is the reality of our network environment? And again, because if we don't get this right at this point from a discovery, we don't figure out what is in the environment, we can't accurately move on to the next phase of modeling. Knowing what we need is highly important too, right? So as we go through this, knowing that the modeling phase includes the need for kinds of communications and what kind of information is required to actually gather for the modeling is important, because we don't want to just gather stuff for the sake of gathering. While it's great to know who your PDUs are and your distributions within a data center, does it matter to a network discovery? Maybe, maybe not. The fact they have them is important. The brand, make, and model, probably not so much. So that kind of level of information and knowing and filtering through stuff is highly important.
And sometimes that information, like Brian said, is not available. You make those educated assumptions. There are tools that can help you do that as well. And by the time you get all this information, you should have everything you need for that modeling phase, which is next. During this process, you'll need to work with your customers. There's ways to facilitate this. You'll meet with all those different groups. You'll need to become an advisor and trusted one at that. Sometimes it's a two-way, it's definitely a two-way dialogue. Here's some other ways to facilitate that working with your customer.
Yeah, and the top one that I like that we discussed is the trusted advisor. It can't be stressed enough that if you can, and ideally you do, become the consulting firm or person that is the trusted advisor, then, well, not only does it make your life easier because anything you say is now the word,
definitive,
but it helps the whole implementation process because nobody's second-guessing each other. And that's really important when, if you say something, the last thing you want is the customer say, well, is that really true? Is that really what I need? It needs to be more, oh, that's unfortunate. That's not what we wanted to hear. But since you said it, it must be accurate, and therefore we're going to move forward. And that kind of level of trust between a client and a consultant or an internal IT person or whoever is doing this work is key to making sure that the information that's gathered and in the end the recommendations are valued and accepted, because otherwise this is a lot of work for a little gain or little value. And don't be surprised. The note of not passing judgment is a funny note, because I had a manager that used to always tell me, don't call the baby ugly. Be careful what you're saying. And I myself fell into a trap once where I went into a client and said, oh my gosh, this is set up awful, XYZ. And I was new to the company I was working for, only to find out that the company I was working for was the one that configured and set it up. And so now I'd called the baby ugly, and yet it was my baby. And that's a very bad thing. So we're there simply, yeah, your mom and your wife would not appreciate that. So it's very important, highly important, that we're there to data gather at this point. Be objective. Just gather information and then verify it. Gather the information, take their word for whatever it is they're saying, take the documents, and then go back and we'll do verification of it later.
A summary of some key network information you'll need to gather, the topology. You'll need to make a diagram.
Or gather one.
Gather one. If they have it, verify it. How many sites they have, what kinds of sites, how many users per site, the links at that site for the WAN and the internet, what are the saturation levels of those links? You'll need to look at the existing traffic on each of these sites, when remote sites, what their maximum peak is, what their average is. This says over 3 months. That depends on the company and what their usage is. You might typically at least a month, 24 hours.
Ideally.
It depends.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a huge backup on a certain weekend see in a two-week period.
If you think of it from a company perspective that does month-end close, and so they have a large accounting server of software of some sort, that could impact either positively or negatively, more than likely negatively, the network at a particular time. And you're only going to catch that once a month at month end. The 3 months goes to quarterly and trying to get that much information. Obviously, the more data we have, the better, because we can get more true trends, especially when we're looking at what's the future trend should be. Are we seeing an escalation? So yes, the past 3 months we were at 40% utilization, but the 3 months prior we were at 30%, and 3 months prior to that we were at 5. So what is this telling? We're growing and data utilization is increasing. So while we may be okay today, within a year we're not.
And you can see that trend.
Right.
You can see it go from this to here. you wouldn't want to average it. You'd want to
trend it.
Trend it.
Right. And really important. And it's also important to know that most of the time people don't have this information. Mm-hmm. And so you have one of two options. You guesstimate it, which is the, it happens, or ideally we set up some probes and we start gathering the information. Some sort of monitoring going on. Put something in place in their network to start gathering this information, because real information will treat us so much better than our guesses, no matter how good we are at guessing.
And this is actually part of a network assessment. You go on site, you would do these probes, do this historical analysis, gather this data. It's not something that can be done over a weekend. It's a long process, mm-hmm. and a customer has to really be committed to it. And you want to find the busy hour average for that traffic. Quality of service, is it configured? Is it applied? Does it work? What other applications might be using it? Here's kind of just a demonstration of an infrastructure. You can see there's all sorts of components. There's remote sites, there's different servers, there's possibly different domains, different ways that different sites connect to the internet, the remote users. Just so much to think about when you're going in for this current network infrastructure discovery.
Yeah, and the tool you use to either discover or the tool we use to document the discovery is less important as the data being all gathered. Now, ideally, we do have something similar to this where it's graphical, because people like graphs, and it makes things easier to look at. But this could be an Excel spreadsheet. This could be data that's just gathered that shows link A to link B and how things are going. But the key important thing is that we know how user A would talk to user B, because that's going to be, as when we get to our modeling phase, how we would determine where we need to place servers and how things are going, and how many users and all of the modeling and personas that we look at. So without this information being accurate gathered in the discovery phase, we're already two steps behind.
Historical metrics, it's how they use their current telephony or conferencing or even RTC products. You would gather this data, and as you can see here, it's showing that 30% from 70 to 100%. That's a typical industry standard. 30% should be allocated, no more than 30% should be allocated to RTC traffic. You want to make sure your average busy hour doesn't intrude into that. If it does, then that's something you would document, put it into your recommendations phases later. You'd use that also for when you're doing your modeling and your traffic simulation to see if that's true. Here's the PSTN example, just a brief, small little diagram of a possible configuration. This is a simple IP PSTN gateway with a PBX and a link server.
Mm. And this is extremely, extremely high level. It's not uncommon. This would be even a deeper picture or of information. But just like we've documented the network, we also need to document the phone network, right? So where there happens to be MTAs, where we happen to have communication at various points, various hubs of communication within the existing environment, in order to know how that traffic is being moved around the network today. Because if it's on copper, if it's traditional, we're not impacting the network. And they have something separate that they're moving that data over. We're not using that once we roll to all this voice over IP and video over IP. So it's highly important that we know how the PSTN network is configured and designed, just like we know what the physical network is configured and designed.
Whether you're replacing a current RTC traffic with link or you're coming all new with the new RTC traffic. Conferencing, you need to discover everything about the conferencing infrastructure, conferencing data. If you don't have any usage data available, go to the people who pay the bills. Finance departments will usually be able to tell you or help you look up how much usage that is happening.
You're extrapolating, right? Because most companies that are using a conferencing bridge, while they may be doing chargebacks, which will help you in the, from the accounting perspective, they may or may not. They may just be one big bill, and then it's up to you to kind of go and delve it down. One key concept of the discovery phase is this is not simple. This is a lot of time. This is a long phase, and probably one of, if not the longest of all the phases, depending on the size of the company, because we are getting and requesting and re-requesting and finally forcing the data to get to us, and then we have to, you know, interpret the data and turn it into actual information that is of any value to us. So while we have 12 million minutes in this example of conferencing, well, what does that mean to me? Do I then break that down into in per day, per number of employees? How, what percentage of people are doing this? Is this only three salespeople that are, which would be a lot of minutes, but 12 million minutes, how is that broken down? How many conferences? You can kind of start extrapolating out the number of participants per conference and gain all that information, but it's really up to you to typically get that information and take the raw data and turn it into something that's going to be useful.
Next, you'd go into Discover and document your current client devices. These will include Link devices or other UC devices and analog. Some of the device characteristics of Link phones would be whether they're PoE, if they're on their separate VLAN, and are they qualified with Microsoft?
Right, because if you think about it, and PoE is not in the environment, then that means on the get-go that either we don't use phones that are PoE, or we're having to recommend that they purchase the a block, power block for every phone, or we're recommending they purchase either PoE injectors or replace their switches with PoE. That could be potentially an option. There's a lot of things when we talk PoE, and when you think PoE, that also introduces other complications, which stuff like if power's lost to that PoE switch or the injector, what does that mean for your phones? They're dead unless there's a UPS that's backing that up. And then does that UPS have a bigger UPS or a generator or some other alternate source? Or will our phones die if we lose power? All of that comes into play when we're thinking about a Link phone environment from a requirements perspective. What is it that they're looking to deploy? And based off what they're going to deploy, what infrastructure is required for that deployment to be successful?
And then in general, there's three types of supported phones. There's the desk phones, conferencing phones, and there's common area phones. The analog devices. You need to discover all the analog devices, whether that's faxes, alarms.
Gateways. Big ones are faxways, fax machines, inside alarms, paging systems. Anything that has to do with an old POTS line or some RJ11 copper that's coming into something somewhere, somehow, why is it coming in that way? And how do we support it in the Link environment? Or is it excluded from the project as something that is out of scope, which is not uncommon.
Yeah.
Sometimes we just say you have a fax bank that's going into your server and it has,
you just keep it separate,
18 lines. That's going to be a different, you're not going to consolidate that into Link. We don't want that traffic in Link. It doesn't do us the value that you want for your particular requirements. Therefore, it's excluded. But acknowledging it and knowing it, because nothing's worse than getting through a Link deployment and then at the very end going, how do we plug in our fax? Yeah, it's not a good thing to have.
Do the phones in the elevators work still?
Right. Emergency paging phones. We've been to schools with exactly the problem. You think things that you never even think about, that when you're in an elevator and you push the red button and that automatically has to call somebody, that go off hook. In a Link environment, there's something has to be told to go off hook. And there are solutions for this. We were able to do a pure Link, but that's got to be considered. And then the emergency phones on school campus, where if they picked up the phone, did it go off hook, give their location, let the security desk know that there was a problem, and blah, blah, blah. So all of that stuff that typically you never think about all become part of this play.
And you don't want to discover it after the
fact.
That's
right.
You deploy your Link, you've done your network assessment, everything's great, and then you totally forgot to look at the elevator phones, for example. So next, locating network impairments and possible roadblocks.
Which could roll right around be the analog phones, right? Certain things of that nature.
Just things like the health, you know, you need to monitor your network health. Are there WAN optimizers? Do people use VPNs? Are there firewall policies?
QoS in place? Are things working the way you'd expect them to work? Really all comes back to what roadblocks could potentially be in the environment or configuration that already exists that's in the environment because it's used for something else. A great example is that they already have a voice over IP system that already may be configured for QoS specific to that application and not necessarily what we want in our queues. spell. It's just knowing what's there in order to figure out what and how things are configured and set up in order to move forward.
Or is the topology itself, the way it's configured, a roadblock? Or possibly other line of business applications that are configured for QoS that have a, for some reason, have a higher priority? You just need to discover that. Make some planning with the networking team. To monitor your network health, there's a couple of tools. There's Microsoft System Center Operations Manager. There's some key health indicators that are included with the Link Server, or that are documented very well with the Link Server Networking Guide that are very important. We'll go over those a little bit later in this. WAN optimizers. Just need to identify the service provider and the technology being used. They might affect your traffic differently.
Yeah, and this comes back to sometimes it makes sense to have an optimizer that is between two locations, a remote site, for instance, that is using file sharing and pulling data over from the corporate location or the data center to the remote site. And so you have an optimizer that's caching data, that is keeping, it's seeing what's going from the remote site all the way out to the data center and vice versa. And multiple people are requesting the same information, well, it caches it, right? It optimizes the WAN based off the type of network you have. And then the type of actual network connection is listed as well. So do you have a frame relay? And if you do, how is it configured, the size of it? Can QoS work over it? Can you pay for QoS on the network segment? MPLS, same thing, ISDN. Do we know what it can and can't do? Just knowing the physical network, how it's optimized, are there optimizers physically involved? Can we exclude link traffic, voice traffic from it, which we'd want to? All of that kind of stuff. What is in the environment today?
With virtual private networks, VPNs, you got to consider that overhead of, if there's, especially when there's two people that are remoted VPNed into, there's that overhead for both going in and out for both. That affects the call quality.
Sure. The whole concept of VPNs and why they're so bad for Link is that, and from a general perspective, we are encrypting and encapsulating encrypted communication. That also means...
Twice.
If it's twice, yes. And for some communication, that means that for most VPNs, we're going to lose our QoS, because the QoS tag, while it's on the packet, is now encapsulated with the VPN packet, and so now we lose all our priority, even if it's internal to the network, like a site-to-site. So the impact of a VPN can't be overstated, and the desire to mitigate and work around these and put exceptions in, which means ACLs in networks, different sub-DNS workarounds, all kinds of different tricks and solutions that we can do, but in general... And key to know that if we say Link and VPN in the same sentence, that's bad. We just don't want VPNs whenever we can work with it. We don't want it.
Firewall policies. There's all sorts of ports, specific ports that need to be open for Link. Whether those firewall policies are configured correctly, allow those ports between different services on the edge servers. And the reverse proxies, whatever is used for that technology, that needs to be documented and verified. Symmetrical versus asymmetrical links. This is something you definitely need to document. There's, in the link world, as we mentioned in a previous module, if you have a 10 megabit down and a 1 megabit up, when planning for link, that's essentially a 1 megabit. You have to consider for the least amount of bandwidth, because it's a two-way traffic when you're using a link, a RTC product.
Yep.
The different kinds of topologies. The network topologies, there's peer-to-peer.
Yeah, when we're thinking about network topologies and how things are communicating, the way communication flows around your network and when you're discovering is trying to figure out what kind of communications on your network are peer-to-peer versus conferencing via PSTN. That could even be from a telephony, simplistic, hey, most of our calls never leave this office. It's Bob in accounting calling Sue in accounting, and while they are a building apart, it's all on the same physical network and it's all internal. Well, we don't necessarily, and we probably wouldn't, want to account for a actual trunk or port for that user when we're calculating total number of concurrency, because that's in concurrent internal calls, not external calls. When we type PSTN in, communication flow is very different in the link world. Now all of a sudden, we're talking and relaying off the mediation server, and or is media bypass involved in this particular location? And are we able to implement and take that communication into effect? Looking at conferencing. Conferencing is all held off the MCUs. So if we have a conference is happening on a server, every stream is going to that particular conference. And so network impact changes for conferencing. So it's while we gather information for peer-to-peer, that's not the same information that's for conferencing and not the same information for PSTN. We need to look at all of these things individually when we're gathering concurrency data for how communication is happening on our network. And that's all impacted by the physical topology, right? So if the majority of calls are peer-to-peer and they're all on the same site, they're almost like irrelevant. Not that they necessarily are, but if you're a gig-backed network, they're going to happen, and they're going to happen just fine. But if it happens to be that they're all peer-to-peer, but they're from China to North America, wow, all of a sudden now every call is coming over the network, and we're having to figure out how that communication is being utilized, and is that WAN traffic making sense? Or do we do a PSTN breakout? All of this communication, all of this information that has to be gathered, all based off our network topologies that we have, based off the trending, as well as the physical topologies of how we're doing communications between the various sites.
The numbers of users at those sites, what kind of servers are at that site, and the location of those servers and devices. QoS, the quality of service, or QoS. You need to ask some specific questions. Here's a list of some of them. Do they have a strategy? Are DHCP markings implemented? What for? Do you have enough ports when you want to configure it? Are you using TCP or UDP? Do the WAN providers allow this QoS markings to go across?
And it's key on the last one, because many, in my experience, most, if not all, large network providers will allow you to have EF or DHCP tagged 46 or guaranteed traffic, which we want for voice, across your MPLS or WAN segments, but at a premium because you're guaranteeing traffic over their network. If that's not the case or you don't have to pay for it, great, but get something to keep in mind. And sometimes a reason why we won't use the guaranteed queue, because just basic cost, could be political, could be that it's not an option with the carrier, but you're going to have to find that out, because the last thing you want to do is recommend a configuration for QoS that is either not supported or out of scope or budget for the project that you're working on. And the only way you're going to gather that is to see what is in play today and what can be done and what's the implementation cost to do so.
Next, we're going to take a brief overview of the Transport Reliability IP Probe tool.
The TRIP. What is the TRIP?
TRIP. It's a Microsoft Online tool that you can use to test your internet connection from your sites, mainly to the Microsoft Online services, but you can use it to test your configuration.
That's right. It's a third-party tool, right, that Microsoft has licensed for their Office 365 environment so that people can test from the data center in XYZ how well does the communication work back to my office, and does it support real-time communications between the data center and me. If it fails miserably, well, then probably we're not going to want to do it, that implementation with Office 365. But again, it's a third-party tool that can be purchased or utilized outside of this. But Microsoft has given you the ability to just run it and give you some general information over internet communications to your location from whichever data center you initiate the communications from.
And they use several different data centers in North America, Europe, Asia. Mm-hmm. And that way, if you have a site in that location, you can kind of get a good idea between
generally
sites.
Generally speaking. Yeah. I mean, this is definitely not definitive information by any sense, but it is great to just know from a generality perspective of how well or what kind of latency we're going to expect, what kind of traffic we can compare. I ran it from the Washington State data center, and I ran it from the Ireland data center, and the latency in Washington was worse than Ireland. I mean, what's going on, right? So it can be a tool that can be utilized to identify information.
And it's so lightweight. It's just a website you go to. You need Java.
And you can run it.
This is the first page. Once you have Java, obviously, you hit start test. It does a series of tests. You come to a report. It'll tell you your downloads and speeds, upload speeds. It'll tell you if it encounters different errors. It'll actually even give you a grade at the end.
Mm-hmm. And for one of the greater values could be potentially the outbound ports. Are these ports open? Can we get to things? And from a Federation perspective, that could be highly important.
Okay. Now we're going to kind of go over some of the key health indicators for determining your server, network, and client health. So here's a list. As part of the Link Server Networking Guide, the one that came out in November, they did a good job of documenting for each server type of Link Server that we'll go over in a different module, but also just in general for your system requirements. And as you can see here, there's like the processor time, different amounts of available memory, network interface counters that are that they've determined are key for determining your server.
And the ranges. This is the important part, right? So while we know the processor and we know the memory utilization and we know the disk utilization, is the current level within a realm that will impact Link negatively or not? Just from a physical hardware perspective, can this box run Link or not? And highly important in a reactive methodology where we're going and trying to fix a current environment, because the box can't handle what we're trying to do to it. You overutilize the disk, or we've overutilized the memory, or whatever the case may be. It could also be a preparatory thing to, we have these servers, would they work in this environment? Or maybe they're the ones that are used from a testing, and we can gather this information there too.
And like I said, and then they have the healthy ranges too. So it's a great documented resource for once you gather this information to make sure the server is able to continue or able to handle the load you were trying to planning on using.
Mm-hmm.
Network devices. Sometimes there's different ways of looking in your network devices to get this kind of information, different reports, different reporting methods that they have. Look at CPU usage, different types of packet drops, queue length errors, et cetera.
Yeah, and this can be just SNMP traps that you're getting off of your switches, off your layer 3 routers, off your firewalls. What kind of network device health am I physically having? So while I know what the servers can do, maybe the problem is not the servers, maybe it is that my switch is overutilized and I'm hitting its backplane limits and I've overutilized it and things aren't going to work the way I'd expect them to. So knowing that information at both the server level and the network level is just as important. Those devices, what are they at? How are we working?
And client health. There's a bunch of different performance reports. Even in the Link Server monitoring reports, you can get reports on the clients and different errors and usages that might for the clients. Some do their own reporting. You can also look at your PSTN gateway reports and Wi-Fi subnet quality reports. That'll help you determine your client health. Here's kind of just a sample Wi-Fi subnet quality report. We'll tell you what kind of streams, which ones are bad, the ratio.
And that will really be determined. All of that's based off whatever you're using to gather that information, right? Because you may either not have something that's gathering this Wi-Fi info, or you are, or you do. You have some metrics and some methodology to gather it. So the reports here are just data gathers that we've either taken raw data, CSV data perhaps, throw them into a spreadsheet to give it a look and feel, or you may actually have a tool that's gathering this information that is native to the Wi-Fi environment you have. So that if you have a wireless LAN access controller, it could very well be giving this information and data for you.
Now we'll look at some of the methods for monitoring and managing. There's ways to manage your configuration drifts by doing audits. There's trend reports you can monitor. There's Link Server features that provide monitoring data. There's a new message analyzer, which is the replacement for Netmon. And there's also third-party monitoring tools. We won't dive into deep of those, but yeah, there's different kinds of drifts that can happen. Your IP/PSTN, your gateway configuration can drift. And I guess we should define drift.
Yeah, because really it's just a fancy way of saying the configuration changed from point A to point B. Yeah. So at January 1st, 2005, the IP/PSTN network was configured as X, and now we go to go make a configuration thinking that's our current config, and that's not, because it's drifted to a different configuration.
We got a new internet provider, so we changed a slight configuration. We added lines, deleted
lines, whatever
the case, just something changed. Same with link server. Same kind of configuration drift could happen, as well as your network devices configuration drift. Here's some of the monitoring reports that can show you some usage trends, overall usage, how they use the PSTN, video, federation. Some of the link server features that provide some of this monitoring data. There's all sorts of data that that link provides at multiple sources. I don't know if we mentioned it earlier, but the system center. Yes, we did. Mm-hmm. There's also event logs, which are remarkably clear. Some will actually tell you, I don't trust that certificate, or I can't talk to the UM servers, et cetera. Synthetic transactions you can run from PowerShell. Performance counters that we will show later, a whole bunch of those for different server roles. Call detail records, which are sort of part of the link server monitoring reports.
And obviously all of that's under the assumption that link's in the environment. If it's not there, none of this data is going to be there. But if we're doing a proactive network assessment, then this is a great location to start to say, okay, things aren't looking healthy now. What's link say? Well, before we get anywhere further, maybe it's something simple as a misconfigured NIC on the link server that's causing a traffic routing issue or something of that nature. But really, using and leveraging link and the information it gathers is highly important from a reactive configuration when we're doing one of these network assessments.
Message Analyzer, it's a replacement for Network Monitor. It's got a bunch of new tools and features to it. It understands SIP now and some other protocols that will help you understand and monitor link in your network. Some third-party monitoring solutions, just throw these out there, AppNeta, NetIQ, there's a whole bunch more.
Yeah, it's really up to you. I mean, in fact, why don't we now flip over to your machine and look at some discovery reports of kind of data that we'd recover. So as part of the course creation, we had to kind of come up with some data that would be what we would think would be the information you'd want to gather. It's going to be completely, it's a great starting point, okay? But it's completely independent on the network that you are actually gathering data on. Some of it may be superfluous, more information than you need. Some of it may be exactly what you'd expect, but it's just data that needs to be gathered. So looking at that, we have a blank sheet, and then we have the data that's actually gathered, right?
Yeah, this is just a form that we've developed for this course. It's not definitive. It could change for every deployment, probably would. We kind of broke it out, like the physical sites, what kind of WAN configuration, the internet, what kind of bandwidth, what's the peak bandwidth, who provides those services, routers, firewalls, all that kind of information. LAN configuration, a lot of the same kind of information. Wireless LAN information. Then there's like a core infrastructure where we dive into the AD and DNS and DHCP and other services that are provided that will affect network readiness.
Yeah, and that's really comes specifically back to link, right? Does your internal DNS support? Are you using Active Directory DNS? And if so, great. If not, do you support the creation of the records that we're going to need for SRV records, for example? From your AD and domain functional levels, are they ready to go? What domains are you going into? All of this will be part of your actual design when we get to a statement of work that's building out the end result. But just knowing in general as a marker in the assessment, hey, FYI, your AD is not ready for this. You're going to have to upgrade in order for this to work.
Or your DNS doesn't provide SRV support.
Right.
Some of the physical configuration, Are they virtual? Do you use virtualization? What kind of servers? Their make, their model, what their processors, memory, all the kind of configuration for that. Your phone configuration. Do you have a PBX currently? What's its make and model? PRIs, T1s. What's your port utilization? Number of handsets. All sorts of things, hunch groups. And then your client hardware configuration. Do you use VDI? What are your PCs, your minimal PC makes and models?
And why you ask, that's the kind of stuff of when we're recommending things, can we recommend that you use the soft client? If your PC is not capable, that call is not going to work. If you're running an application on that box that overutilizes the processor or there's an insufficient memory, Link uses memory. Link uses processor. And if it's not there, then the soft client is going to underperform to extreme awful level. I mean, just to a jitter and stutter. And it's not that it's you're receiving it in that method. It's that your box doesn't have the processor cycles to actually handle that communication inbound.
Or if you're trying to put HD video on an old XP box or something. And that's just, so you're not surprised. You get this all documented, make that evaluation. And so this is kind of something, maybe you'd mail this to your different teams ahead of time, have them fill it out, and then
end up with something like this.
Something like this. You get it down to two sites.
Well, in this case, we have two
in
sites.
This, right? In the site for the course for this exam, this is what we've come up with. Not necessarily always needed, but you have it. You're not surprised. You don't need to say, I think so. I think you'll be okay. This is just some kind of fake stuff we made up for their model name, router model names, and
whether QoS is configured. But when we get down to stuff like the internet bandwidth in its peak and the network bandwidth in its peak, well, that's all what's going into the modeling, right? So that's where we're gathering all this information. Without it, we're not going to be able to build an accurate model. So knowing the number of users at the site, knowing the types of internet configuration for that site, knowing the current peak utilization, peak utilization being 90%, you're almost peaked all the time, whether it's a peak's a peak, right? So during that peak, you don't have but 10% bandwidth left. If that's not enough bandwidth, depending on the size of that pipe for that site, something's got to change. Either by policy, you don't use it, or you increase network, or Link doesn't work at that site. I mean, you've got to weigh the values of the application versus the cost of the infrastructure increases required to make things work. Because no matter how you look at it and how you shake this, Link requires bandwidth. Link requires resources.
Yeah, and if you were going to drop Link into that environment that's already 90 or 100% utilized at peak bandwidth, you're in trouble.
Right.
Especially with that 30% utilization recommendation that Microsoft has, that 30% of it should be allocated for RTC traffic.
Exactly. Okay. So with that, that's conceptually what we've been looking at. It's really just looking at your data that you're gathering, all the information that you're needing, all the way from the network to the physical locations to the voice topology that you may or may not have, all of that information that you're trying to gather, and then documenting it, writing it down, getting it ready for a report, because at the very end, we're going to have to take this information into the next phase, into the modeling phase. And if we don't have it nice and cleanly documented, it makes our life that much harder. And then eventually, all that information is going to roll up into the recommendations phase.
Which, goes from discovery to modeling to simulation. It all has to be accurate, documented, and they'll feed off each other in that process. And it's part of what you'll submit in your recommendations report, most likely, as the deliverable to the client.
Right. And that's the end result, right? They're buying this report. So with that, that is the discovery phase. And other modules will include the other phases as well. And we will go from there. Thanks so much.
Thanks.